Today, AI, bubble or transformational, or both? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of his posts covering the finance and property news. Today, I want to discuss a really important question. Are current AI trends a speculative bubble, or do they represent a lasting change in economic fundamentals? Given that most of the US market's rise in recent times has been driven by the hike in the price of just a few stocks centered on AI, this is an important question, not least because when a bubble pops, it tends to be ordinary investors and their superannuation, which takes a hit because professional investors farm out risks to those at the end of the chain. So I want to map the economics of exuberance against the lessons of past manias and compare valuation metrics from the dot-com era to today's AI leaders. And also think about what major institutions are saying, particularly warning at the moment, and also draw out the likely macro and micro consequences of a sizable market correction if that were to occur. Now, this discussion is also prompted by the significant rise in AI-related cross-investments and strategic partnerships, as big tech firms are increasingly taking equity stakes in AI startups, while those startups in turn accept capital, cloud commitments, and commercial deals from those same incumbents. It sounds a bit incestuous, really. Microsoft's multi-phase, multi-billion dollar partnership and capital support for OpenAI, including agreements that makes Azure OpenAI the startup's exclusive cloud provider, is a clear example of deep financial and operational entanglement. Google and Amazon have purchased similar plays. Alphabet and Google has repeatedly invested in Anthropic and expanded commercial ties, while Amazon has committed large sums and designated cloud roles for Anthropic as well. And corporate venture units and dedicated AI funds across the tech sector have also multiplied, formalizing those cross investments at massive scale. And of course, this means that these large players have now taken numerous minority stakes in those foundation building models and infrastructure startups as part of competitive cloud chip and platform strategies. And even people like Broadcom, Oracle, and AMD have all benefited from similar cross-investments with commitments from AI firms well ahead of their current capacity to pay. Now, there are a bunch of economic and financial risks embedded in such cross-leverage. For example, there is a concentration of counterparty risks because equity stakes plus exclusive or preferential commercial relationships concentrate exposure. A shock to a single large startup can impair the investing incumbent's financial returns and its cloud or chip business economics, creating a feedback loop into its valuations and liquidity. There's also potential conflicts of interest and market distortions when incumbents both own stakes and provide essential inputs like cloud, chips, and distribution capability. Pricing and non-pricing terms can favor portfolio firms, reduce competitive neutrality and distort investment signals across the wider market. And it's all very non-transparent as well. Moral hazard and risks can be amplified. Therefore, startups may take greater technological or commercial risks, knowing a deep pocket partner will supply capital or absorb losses via preferential contracts. And incumbents may accept higher valuation risk to deny rivals strategic assets, amplifying systemic leverage. And of course, some of these big AI players are private companies, so again, their disclosure is very, very low. There's also the risk of file sale and contagion channels. If a correction starts off, that may force startups to write down valuations or incumbents to reduce support. Tightly linked equity and commercial positions therefore can trigger rapid de-risking across platforms and market makers, propagating losses into broad equity indices and non-bank credit providers. It could all get very nasty very quickly. It's a bit like a pack of cards. If the cards start to fall, they all go. And then, of course, there is regulatory and competitive risk, with large cross investments attracting antitrust and national security scrutiny. Possibly there could be sudden regulatory restrictions or remedies, perhaps even forced divestitures or limitations on exclusivity. And that may change the expected cash flows and valuations for both startups and their backers. And of course, in the US, the Trump administration seems to be fanning the flames of this at the moment, saying, yes, go, 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 rather than asking questions of whether there should be more regulation. And one of the things that I see little coverage of is the fast depreciation of AI chips as new generations emerge, meaning expensive turns cheaper in accordance with Moore's law. And it could well be that we end up with too many data centers with a lot of stuff inside them that is now fully depreciated and therefore relatively worthless. How is that going to show on balance sheets? There are big questions here, clearly. So cross-investment does increase the covariance between perceived technological fundamentals and market prices. On one hand, deep commercial ties and capital support can accelerate real adoption and infrastructure scaling and even strengthen fundamentals for surviving firms. But on the other hand, when ownership and supply roles overlap, paper wealth like equity markets become more tightly coupled to strategic positioning rather than standalone cash flow prospects. That raises the odds that a sector-wide reappraisal of realistic margins and adoption timelines could possibly produce a sharper market correction than would be implied by a set of arm's length investments. So that means that policymakers should be monitoring those developments very closely, considering the combined equity contractual infrastructure exposures across incumbents and startups, and consider targeted disclosure requirements and even review procedures for exclusivity that create systemic concentration risks. But no, they're not really doing that at the moment. And for institutional investors and students modeling those scenarios, they really should be including joint exposure channels like equity and supplier contracts and risks in stress tests, and model outcomes when incumbents withdraw support or when regulators impose behavioral remedies, and also consider spillovers to market-based finance and corporate credit. No, they're not doing that either. They're just spruiking it ever higher. So for startups and managers, they need to balance capital needs against dependency risk, neutral cloud, and multi-provider commercial strategies, reduce single-point failure and preserve optionality to exit and also to manage the governance issues carefully. But no, again, we're crowding this into a few players, and for many of them, the risks don't seem to be being spoken about very much, which is a problem. So because cross-investments bind paper valuations to strategic industrial positions as much as to standalone profitability, that linkage can accelerate the translation of technological promise into real investment infrastructure, but it also can raise systemic fragilities when capital, contracts, and control flows from the same set of players. A correction becomes more contagious and harder to predict. So we really need to model those channels explicitly and weigh both the upside of accelerated adoption and the downside of amplified independence when you judge whether AI is mainly a bubble or a change in fundamentals. And actually, the 2008 global financial crisis was largely also a story of cross-leverage, but in the financial system, and that blew up when the music stopped. So to me, the current AI investment boom appears to at least rhyme with what happened and created, of course, a huge and global economic headache just 17 years ago. And actually, railway mania, the South Sea bubble, and the dot-com boom all share a common set of anatomies, an alluring new technology opportunity, rapid capital inflows, extreme concentration of investor attention on a small set of claims, and eventual large repricing that destroyed wealth for many, while leaving a handful of survivors whose businesses became genuinely transformative. Each episode left durable infrastructure or business models behind, even as valuations collapsed. Railways created a transport network, a later wave of credible internet firms built the platforms on which modern commerce runs. But just don't mention all those telcos who invested madly around the year 2000 in the dark fibre that took years and years to come to life and who lost billions and billions in the process. The Bank of England's Financial Policy Committee recently flagged that equity valuations, especially for AI-focused technology companies, look stretched on a number of measures, and that concentration increases systemic vulnerability to a sudden repricing. Absolutely right. And the IMF's recent analysis emphasizes a dual outcome. AI could either spark a productivity-driven expansion or precipitate a sharp market correction if investor expectations are disappointed, with knock-on risks to growth and vulnerable economies. Commentators and independent analysts have also drawn parallels between current valuation patterns and the dot-com era, while also noting important differences in corporate balance sheets and the scale of physical investment in AI infrastructure. But you see, this is the point. You can have both. You can get some significant long-term benefits from this investment, whilst at the same time taking a bath for the majority of investors simply because of the overdone valuations on the way through, which is where I think we are. So, if a market correction occurs, what are the likely channels and consequences? Well, firstly, of course, wealth and consumption will be impacted. A sharp fall in high valuation AI and tech stocks would directly reduce household and institutional wealth, lowering consumption and potentially trimming GDP growth. The IMF warns that tighter financial conditions could drag down global growth and also hit developing countries even harder. And then there is the concentration and volatility question. Heavy index concentration means a correction concentrated in a handful of large firms would propagate to broader indices, raising volatility and prompting risk-off reallocations. And then, of course, there's the question of the credit and the non-bank finance channels, because if losses force deleverage in market-based finance, liquidity in core markets could compress and credit availability become costlier, amplifying a downturn. And then in the real economy, a correction that slows investment in AI infrastructure would delay productivity gains and possibly lead to the reallocation of labour and capital, producing a longer, more gradual adjustment rather than immediate technological obsolescence. The historical pattern is that shocks prune weaker firms but leaves productive adopters and platforms to persist eventually. And then there are the policy and monetary questions. A risk to central bank credibility or an abrupt tightening of policy could compound valuation declines and raise spillover risks across sovereign bond markets. That was highlighted specifically by the Bank of England. Now, there are some important differences between the dot-com peak and the current AI era. If you think about the dot-com peak in the year 2000, there were a few big tech names that dominated the NASDAQ and tech indices, and there were some very significant and temporary extreme valuations, sometimes 100 times plus forward earnings. Whereas in the current AI era, we've got 5 to 7 firms, which constitute around 30% of the S&P 500 market, with a record concentration for the modern indices. And of course, that means that AI names attract disproportionate level of capitals and also, because of passive trading, continue to get more concentrated. So that's a big and important issue going forward. Specifically on the price multiples of the frontier firms, there were many internet startups trading with little or no revenue and, frankly, sky-high multiples, as I mentioned, 100 times plus. Whereas in the current story, large AI incumbents often show strong cash flows, but then AI pure plays and some private firms trade at very high revenue multiples, and there are examples of multi-hundred billion valuations versus modest current revenues when they're reported, and again, a lot of those are private, so we don't get much information. There were a large share of listed dot-coms that were frankly just really unprofitable even before the crash. It was obviously something was going to happen, whereas leading hyperscalers are currently profitable and cash rich. So many adopters and startups show limited or delayed returns on AI investments in the near term. So it's a real big mix, but there are these large firms with very, very deep pockets that can throw a lot of money, and by the way, get tax breaks if things go wrong. So there are some differences, but also some significant parallels between these two eras. So let's try and now boil this back to how this episode differs from past bubbles and what that might imply. Well, firstly, we do have stronger incumbents. Unlike many dot-com entrants that lacked profits, today's largest AI firms, the hyperscalers and chip leaders, have substantial cash flows and balance sheets. That reduces the chance of a complete systemic implosion, but it doesn't eliminate severe repricing of speculative claims. And today, some of them are still looking for returns of PE ratios towards 30, which is still pretty excessive. There is, of course, also a real capital intensity because there are large, tangible investments being made in data centers, chips, and networks. Those provide durable assets. Even if some firms fail, shifting some losses from purely financial to real economy reallocation. But, as I said earlier on, the depreciation rate on some of these assets will be huge, and therefore there are big losses to be eaten at some point, even if you can offset them against tax later. There may be some asymmetric outcomes too, because the likely outcome is not a single uniform fate. We can expect a sharp correction in speculative revenue light AI plays and a consolidation in the sector and a slower diffusion of productivity gains, an episode perhaps presenting a classic creative destruction cycle more than a total technological collapse. But there are some implications of all this. Firstly, we need to distinguish price from value. High market prices reflect expectations, but we need to assess whether those expectations are discounted appropriately into current multiples and to stress test the assumptions driving them. So I think we should use scenario analysis, fast productivity realization, delayed adoption, and a disorderly repricing under tighter financial conditions would actually give us some very different outcomes if you compared the cash flows under each of those scenarios. And we need to think about market concentration and structure as well. A concentration index amplifies tail risk, so we should measure the exposure not only by headline market cap, but also by the correlation and liquidity in crisis scenarios. And boy, it's concentrated at the moment. And then we should think about cross-border spillovers. Emerging market vulnerabilities can amplify a shock into a global growth slowdown. And policy responses will probably differ across jurisdictions. And that means that there are going to be significant implications and even very different distributional outcomes in different areas. And in terms of policy matters, we should think about regulation. Is it clear? What about competition policy and targeted public investment in complementary infrastructure, which perhaps can shape whether AI's long-run gains are realized or whether short-term hype dominates. And then, of course, whether central banks handle this appropriately and whether we get the right market-based financial resilience and responses will be key stabilizers potentially. So all up, it seems to me that history does give us a grammar for interpreting bouts of speculation. Similar structures repeat, but details differ. Currently, AI markets combine bubble-like investment fervor and stretch valuations, but with meaningful real-world investment and strong incumbent balance sheets. So that combination does provide a plausible near-term path for sharp repricing among speculative players, wider market volatility through concentration effects, and longer-term structural change driven by surviving firms and infrastructure investment. The policy challenge, of course, is to limit systemic spillovers while maximizing the chances the technology yields broad productivity gains rather than concentrated paper wealth. So as a philosopher and economist, I think we need to map scenarios, quantify exposures, and focus on policies that can make the upside inclusive and the downside containable. But to me, yes, we are in the hype part of the cycle. The valuations are overdone, and a correction is highly likely at some point. But the question, as always, is timing. but FOMO may drive many investors into the sector just before it pops. It always does. And frankly, this bubble is no different. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.